the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Shri Govindavala. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Nitinamine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschati Deshakarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Eleventh Canto, Chapter 5, Verse 48. Vairena yam patayah shishupala paundra Shalvada yoga tivilasa vilokanakye Jayanta akrita bhiyah shayanasanado Tatsamya papur anivakta dhyam punahkim Translation purport by the disciple Srila Prabhupada. Inimical kings like Shishupal, Paundrak, and Shalva were always thinking about Lord Krishna, even while they were lying down, sitting, or engaging in other activities. They enviously meditated upon the bodily movements of the Lord, his sporting pastimes, his loving glances upon his devotees, and other attractive features displayed by the Lord. Being thus always absorbed in Krishna, they achieved spiritual liberation in the Lord's own abode. What then can be said of the benedictions offered to those who constantly fix their minds on Lord Krishna in a favorable, loving mood? Purport. On the eve of the disappearance of Lord Krishna from this world, Vasudev became filled with lamentation, thinking that he had not properly utilized the opportunity of the Lord's personal presence to become perfectly Krishna conscious. However, Narad Muni assured Sri Vasudev that the glories of Vasudev and his good wife Devaki were chanted throughout the universe because even the demigods worship the exalted status of the Lord's own parents. Vasudev was not only concerned about his own spiritual position, but he also lamented for the Yadu dynasty, which had left the world in an apparently inauspicious way, being cursed by great Brahmins such as Narad and dying in a fratricidal war. Although the members of the Yadu dynasty were personal associates of the Lord, their disappearance from the earth was apparently inauspicious, and therefore Vasudeva was concerned about their eventual destination. So Narad here assures Vasudeva that even the demons who oppose Krishna, such as Shishupal, Paundrika, and Shalva, achieved promotion to the Lord's own abode because of their constant absorption in thinking of Krishna. Therefore, what to speak of the exalted members of the Yadu dynasty who actually love Krishna more than anything else? Anurakta dhiyam punha kim. Similarly, it is stated in the Garuda Puran, Ajnaninha suravaram samadhikshipanto yam papino pishishupala suyodhanadya muktim gataha smaranamatra vidhuta papaha kaha samshayaha parama bhakti matam jananam. Even foolish sinners like Shishupal and Duryodhan, who showered abuse upon the Lord, were cleansed of all sins simply by remembering Lord Krishna. Some or other, their minds were absorbed in the Lord and thus they attained liberation. What doubt then is there about the destination of those who are overwhelmed with devotional feelings for the Lord? Vasudeva was also feeling anxiety because on the one hand he was aware that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but at the same time he treated the Lord as his beloved son. In the relationship between the father and son, sometimes the father must chastise the son and restrict him in various ways. In this way, Vasudeva was feeling that undoubtedly he had offended the Lord in his attempt to train Lord Krishna as his son. However, Lord Krishna is actually pleased when a pure devotee becomes absorbed in parental love for him and thus devotedly tries to care for him just as loving parents care for a small child. Krishna reciprocates the intense devotional feelings of such devotees by actually appearing before them as a young boy and acting just like their son. As mentioned in this verse, the demons actually chastise Krishna with feelings of enmity. Nevertheless, such demons attain liberation due to their absorption in Krishna. Therefore, what to speak of the destination of Vasudeva, who chastised Krishna due to his overwhelming parental love for him? The conclusion is that the devotees of the Lord should never consider Vasudeva and Devaki to be ordinary conditioned souls. Their relationship with Lord Krishna is completely on the transcendental platform of Vatsalya Rasa or parental love for the personality of Godhead. It has nothing to do with the parental love of the material world, which is based on a mood of sense gratification, since the parents see their children as objects of material enjoyment. I'm not sure about that last line, but you know. Maybe it's written by somebody who doesn't have a child. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Okay, interesting topic. This topic has risen over and over again in Srimad Bhagavatam, vexed the minds of some really great sages. Vidura was one of them, and he had a problem with this. And he spoke to Maitreya about this, and there's a whole chapter on this. The seventh canto, first chapter, deals exclusively with this. And Prabhupada's commentary is really enlightening. Anybody who wants to read about the demons and what happens to them should see, look up the seventh canto, first chapter. Also in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu talks at great length about this. I forget where. Somewhere. No, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. About the demons and... Chapter 5, that's right. 36. Jai ho. Chapter 5, verse 36, and then it goes on to 39, 40, and so on. Yeah, that's where he talks. I don't know how you do it, Prabhu. Anyway, it must be Paramatma. So, so what are the main issues here? There are some issues that needed to be sorted out in the Bhagavatam, in the minds of the devotees like Vidura. And also Yudhishthira Maharaj posed this question to Narad Muni. The issue is that Krishna seems to be partial, although he says in the Bhagavad Gita, Samaham Sarva Bhuteshu Na Me Dveshtosti Na Priyaha, I am equal to everybody. I do not despise anybody. You know, nobody is dear to me. At least that's the verse. The verse says, Samaham Sarva Bhuteshu Na Me Dveshtosti Na Priyaha. So if that's the case, then why does he kill the demons in preference to the devotees? You know, he says, when there is a problem with dharma going down, then I come. Vinayashaya Chadushkritam, to kill the demons I come. So this becomes partiality. So let's understand this a little bit more. When we in the material world, now we're not talking about Krishna, in the material world, when people identify with the body and this body, then when somebody praises the body, praises us, which means praises the body or the body's abilities, the person becomes happy. And when somebody criticizes us, that means criticizes the body, the body's qualities, then the person becomes unhappy. So this is the quality of being, and so becoming unhappy, the person becomes inimical to those who criticize him and becomes favorable to those who praised him or her. So this means that anybody who becomes inimical because somebody said something, or anybody becomes favorable because somebody praised, that person is acting on the bodily platform. How nice it would be if we had an ISKCON where nobody took any offense. Anybody says something, criticizes somebody, nobody took any offense. That's okay, I deserve it. Then what would happen is that we would all go back to Godhead because there is no offense possible in ISKCON. Everybody in this life would go back to Godhead. not happening, because we misidentified with the body. So, but how can Krishna do that? If the demons criticize Krishna, like Shishupal did, you know, Shishupal's whole life was basically an exercise in criticizing Krishna. The moment he was born, his mouth was going, working all the time, trash-talking Krishna, against Krishna. So, finally Krishna not lost his patience, but the 100 offenses were done that he promised to his mother, and then he killed him. So this means that Krishna has a fault, because he is affected by somebody's criticism, and therefore he is behaving, you know, inimically to the demons. So this is the problem that the devotees are trying to sort out. That people who are embodied can have those faults, but the Supreme Lord should not have those faults. So if he is killing the demons, and he is, you know, taking the side of Indra, Indra Vyakulam Lokam Hridayanti Yuge Yuge, a famous verse, then he is favoring the devatas. For what reason? Just because they favor him, whereas the demons he kills. So this is the kind of overall debate, question. How should we address this? So, actually, it turns out that Krishna is not partial for the following reasons. First, and this is following Srila Prabhupada's commentaries in this 7th canto, 1st chapter, and also other places. First, the response is that Krishna doesn't always favor the devatas. Sometimes the demons are on the rise. Sometimes the devatas are on the rise. So when the devatas are on the rise, when their star is in the ascendant, when things are going well for them, then Krishna seems to be protecting them and killing the demons. But then at other times, demons like Hiranyakashipu are in ascendance. So what is Krishna doing then? I mean, the devatas had to run away from heaven. Bali Maharaj took over all the departments and put installed demons in each of the posts that the devatas had. And Indra and everybody else was hiding. What was Krishna doing then? So one response is that actually Krishna's plan is sometimes sattva increases, and then sattva guna increases in the universe, the devatas are protected. And then sometimes tamo guna increases. So he's not impartial. Because sometimes the demons are favored, sometimes the devatas are favored. So we as devotees know that he is partial, that he kills the demons to protect the devatas, ultimately. That's the issue, that's the bottom line. You don't see Krishna killing the devatas to protect the demons. So this is the first response. The second response, and there are layers of responses, is that there are three types of people who criticize Krishna. Three types. Krishna Chakravarti Thakur mentions this. The first type was mentioned today. The first type is Vasudev and Devaki, who chastise Krishna. Okay? Externally it looks like they are chastising him. Actually, it's another verse which I remembered to pull up on my iPhone, where the gopis chastise Krishna. This is 10:47:17. Like a hunter, he cruelly shot the king of the monkeys with arrows, Lord Ram killing Vali. Because he was conquered by a woman, Sita, he disfigured another woman who came to him with lusty desires, Shukantha. And even after consuming the gifts of Bali Maharaj, he bound him up with ropes as if he were a crow. So let us give up all friendship with this dark complexioned boy, even if he can't give up talking about him. So the gopis are criticizing unfairly. Lord Ram and then Ramandev, and then Krishna. So this is one type of criticism, and it bears no negative reaction, obviously, because this is love disguised as criticism. As well, Vasudeva and Devaki, as this commentary makes the point. The second type of criticism is that of Shishupal, Poundrak, and others, Shalva. This is very beautiful. So, Shishupal, you know, he would literally abuse Krishna. He's a coward boy, he's come here. He doesn't deserve to be in this assembly of kings, you're offering this respect. And then he would recount how he ran away from battle, coward, and so on, you know, all kinds of names. But every time Shishupal, as this verse explains, was absorbed in Krishna. Gati vilasa vilokana adyayihi. Gati, translated here as movements of Krishna, sporting of Krishna, glances of Krishna, ध्यायन्तः मेडिटेटिंग आकृत धीय फिक्स देयर माइंड्स शयन आसन आदव व्हाइल स्लीपिंग व्हाइल सिटिंग. सो व्हाट हैपेंस एवरी टाइम दे आर क्रिटिकल ऑफ कृष्णा विच इज ऑल ऑल दिस every second they are meditating on Krishna. So the sin that accrues from criticizing Krishna is immediately washed off simultaneously. So they are offending Krishna and simultaneously they are purifying themselves. So therefore the net sum is, because the purification of Krishna is far more powerful than criticism of Krishna, therefore they become liberated at the time of death. So in the case of Shishupal and also Pandrak, and Shal and so on. So in the case of Shishupal, when Shishupal was beheaded, he was in the assembly, everyone assembled saw, Yudhishthira was one of them, that Shishupal's soul merged into Krishna's body. And Yudhishthira was surprised. He said, well, the Shastras say that if you offend Krishna, if you abuse Krishna, if you say negative things about criticizing, then the sin that accrues is far greater than, you know, killing X number of Brahmanas. It's really horrible. And, you know, have to go to hell for who knows how long. And here, Shishupal, who is the crown prince of the criticizers, you know, abusers of Krishna, he is getting liberation. Because I saw him merge into Krishna's body, so how is this possible? He couldn't compute that. And the point here is that, oh, by the way, about this merging, I find it curious how this merging business happens. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that, and I think Prabhupada also explains, that when they merge, because Krishna appeared in this world with all avatars, Jay and Vijay, Shishupal and Dantavakra, they are actually servants of Lord Narayan in Vaikuntha. They are not direct servants of Krishna. But because Krishna's body has Narayan, they are actually merging with Narayan inside of Krishna. And once they merge with Narayan, so that is Sayujya, the technical term. Sayujya means merging. But this merging is different. Shishupal is not actually permanently merging with Krishna's or Narayan's body. Rather, he appears to merge for everybody else's benefit. And then he goes back to the spiritual world as Jaya and serves Lord Krishna, Vishnu in Vaikuntha as the gatekeeper back to his original position. But there are other demons who don't get that. Like Kamsa, for example, he got Sayujya. Sayujya means that, there the Sayujya means that he merged with Krishna's effulgence, Brahma Jyoti, he merged into Brahman. This Brahman is also quite an interesting topic. And Chaitanya Charitamrita explains that Brahman, also called Siddha Loka, is just outside Vaikuntha. So Vaikuntha is a spiritual planet. And I always thought it was not limited in space, in finite, but apparently it has a boundary. And outside of Vaikuntha is the, you could say, the rays of, the shining rays of Vaikuntha that are spilling over the city, or the abode. And those rays that spill over are Brahma Jyoti, of the effulgence. And beyond those rays, so again, these rays are also delimited. And beyond them is the Karana ocean, in which Karana Rishai Vishnu lies down. And then beyond that is Maya. So Kamsa, for example, he's merging into this Brahma Jyoti and basically is transported to this this effulgence, as Prabhupada calls it, outside of Vaikuntha. That's where he ends. That's his destination. But the devotees don't end there, they actually enter Vaikuntha. So Kamsa went to Brahma Jyoti, and Shishupal went to Vaikuntha. Both demons, both criticize Krishna, different destinations. So that's the second category of criticizers. And actually Narada makes an extraordinary statement that has been commented extensively on by the acharyas, that actually meditating on Krishna in enmity is far more far more absorbing than meditating on Krishna with bhakti. Which we can talk about later. The third type of criticizers are not so fortunate. In their the category of King Vena, for example. Because Yudhishthira was confused. Vena, he criticized Krishna and he was a demon. And he went to hell. The Brahmanas cursed him and he went to hell. so many, you know, so long, for so many lifetimes. So Vena is the third type of person who criticizes Krishna. He is not fully absorbed in Krishna. The criticism is not producing absorption, complete absorption in Krishna. He is actually absorbed in other things. And envious and inimical to all other types of people, like the devotees of Krishna, Brahmins, the Brahmins, and the people of the city who he was torturing. But he doesn't get that destination. So the acharyas don't recommend that we should fix on Krishna in enmity. For this reason, we may not achieve full absorption and then we go to hell because we committed all kinds of offenses. It's a terrible offense to be offensive to Krishna. Tanaham dvishataha kruran sansareshu naradhaman shipami ajasramma shubhana asurushyadalukha yonishu. Dvishataha, those who despise me, Krishna says, I put them in those species. So, not recommended. In fact, bhakti excludes the absorption of Shishupal and Kamsa and so on. The definition of bhakti yoga does not include this absorption by enmity, even though there is continuous absorption, which might be superior to bhakti. So Kamsa, that's why the word anukulyana Krishna anushilanam. Anukulya means favorably absorbed in Krishna, not pratikulyana. Pratikul means like Kamsa. He was absorbed in Krishna, but he was not favorable to Krishna. And so then that is not counted as uttam bhakti. Shishupal is not a devotee, even though he went back to the spiritual world. Vaikuntha. So this is the idea behind these three types of criticizers, why we should avoid being enmity to Krishna, even though enmity can produce absorption that is superior to Krishna. Why Krishna is not impartial, even though he kills the demons. Because even when he kills the demons, he's, you know, it's all auspicious. Whatever Krishna does, that's the vastu shakti. You know, it's like the sun. Prabhupada would give the example that the sun will evaporate water, whether it's in the Ganga or it's in the urine. The sun's not making distinctions. So Krishna doesn't have the fault of distinctions or making partiality. So it's 8:30. I'll stop here with the questions, comments. Krishna.
So you should
So in the case of Shishupal, see, this intense absorption in Krishna during enmity is not, like I said, is not recommended because we cannot produce that absorption by enmity. But it is present in the associates of Krishna. So we have to understand that Shishupal is obeying Krishna's order. Krishna orchestrated the curse of the Kumaras so that Jaya and Vijay would fall, because Prabhupada explains he wanted to fight. Every now and then Krishna feels like he wants to, you know, fighting people. But then who is he going to fight? There's nobody as strong as him. So then he has to pick his special associates, his gatekeepers, because at least they have some measure of power. So Ravan, you know, these are extremely powerful. So then Krishna arranges so that they fall, they come to the spiritual world, and then they act out that role of enmity in Krishna Lila. But of course, that, because they are devotees, that enmity is, they're by default, they are absorbed in Krishna. So they are a unique class of demons. They are not ordinary demons in the sense that they are devotees playing the role of demons. And therefore, they are able to be continuously absorbed. And it's not that they went back to the spiritual world because of that absorption necessarily. I mean, you can look at it from that angle. But they went back because they belonged in the spiritual world. And they were just playing a part. And once the part was finished, Krishna was done, he was satisfied, so they will go back. From another angle, you could analyze. So that's the amazing thing about the Bhagavatam. You can analyze this in several different ways. So there is a passage, Maitreya's discussion, where the question is, well, why did Shishupal go back and why did Ravan not go back? Because he was killed by Lord Ram. Why did Hiranyakashipu not go back? He was killed by Narasimhadev. The fact of the matter is Krishna wanted them to have three births and then they were going to go back. But you can also give reasons why they didn't. Why? So Hiranyakashipu, for example, did not recognize Narasimhadev. as Vishnu. Even when he was killed, Hiranyakashipu didn't have, at the time of death, the understanding this is the Supreme Lord. So he didn't go back to the Supreme Lord. Ravan, when Ravan was killed by Lord Ram, he wasn't attracted to Ram because of the Supreme Lord. He was attracted to Ram's wife, and that's that attraction to Ram's devotee produced attraction for, you know, produced the association with Lord Ram in the battle. But you know, he didn't go back. But then Shishupal, when he was killed at that time, he saw Krishna as Vishnu, four-handed Vishnu. And so he knew that this was Lord, this was Supreme Lord. So we can analyze it these ways, but the ultimate thing is that this is all Krishna's will. He's orchestrating all this. You know. We're just playing parts, playing a role. Question there?
Three different things. One, you know, I've read just even recently that Srila Prabhupada says the gopis are not educated, you know, they are just cowherd girls. And but we see from this marriage, I mean, so many times, like, they know everything. They know Bali Maharaj. So, you know, they're obviously, they're very learned in that sense.
Well, Rupa Goswami is a Manjari, but Rupa Goswami produced the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Yeah. Sanatana Goswami, all these are ultimately, you know, they're acting as a, in Krishna's pastimes as these, you know, maid servants and all and
right,
so on.
Right.
But they are extremely scholarly, as you can see.
Yeah. So why do we say that then?
Like Pranagana Prabhu likes to say, "Tattva gata vichar and lila gata vichar." So tattva is true. They all know everything, and you can see that from the prayers in the 10th canto. But in the lila, they're not behaving like scholars. Rupa Goswami starts to quote Sanskrit verses in his role as a manjari when they have a problem. So in the lila, they're not acting like that.
Okay, then the second thing you said, that the negative absorption of Krishna is more powerful than bhakti. I didn't quite get
I used the word powerful, but then I retracted it. That's not what the verse says. So it produces more intense absorption in Krishna than even bhakti yoga, which would be vaidhi bhakti. But like I said, this is just Narada responding to Yudhishthira's question, trying to explain what's happening. Shishupal is already Krishna's devotee. You know, he's eternal associate. So it's not a surprise for him that he's absorbed. Whereas King Vena is not. So it's not surprising that the demons of the material world right now are not absorbed in Krishna. The atheists who might be inimical to Krishna, not all of them are, but of those who are really inimical to Krishna, they're not absorbed in Krishna because of their enmity. We see that. But the devotees are. Our devotees are trying. So that's why the recommendation is to do bhakti yoga for us. So these truths apply to different people differently. Shishupal, that is true. Shishupal is more absorbed in Krishna than I am absorbed in Krishna. This is true.
So, you said Kamsa went to the Brahma Jyoti. Then where does he go from there?
He stays there. Oh.
Okay.
Govinda Prabhu says he came back as Chandakazi. So he might come back.
Oh, right. I read that. And then Shishupal and...
I didn't know this. He came back as Chandakazi. He got love of Godhead.
Huh?
Do you want to answer?
And Jagai and Madai also came back, right, to take part in Lord Chaitanya.
Right, so yeah.
Sorry.
Krishna works in inscrutable ways. So. But anyway, the general principle is that unless these demons generally are absorbed, get Sayujya Mukti, with exceptions, and those exceptions get Sarlokya and Sarupya. So, you know, Jaya has the same form as Krishna, Sarupya. And he's on the same planet as Krishna, Sarvokriya. So they get that. But they don't,
I believe you said that in describing Shishupal, that the greatest offense is to offend the Supreme Personality of Godhead. However, you know, the analogy of the sun on the head and the hot sand on the feet, that more serious is the offense to the Lord's devotees.
Yeah.
Were you saying that just in the context of describing that favorable and unfavorable idea.
Right. I mean, that was a contextual statement. But if you count, you know, which offense is the worst, then, yeah, Ambarish Maharaj in Durvasa Muni's pastime explains that. But Krishna couldn't protect Durvasa Muni. He said, I can't do anything here. I can't protect you, you have to go and beg for forgiveness from Ambarish. So, this is true. Offenses to devotees. But like I said, if ISKCON was made of devotees who took no offense, then he would be saved. At least not serious offense. You know, of course, people make mistakes and people need to be informed that there are some problems and they should fix them. But if you take such offense that we remember things for 40 years or for 40 lifetimes, then then it's a problem, because then these poor devotees, how are they going to go back?
But you were saying that he was like inimical towards the Lord, but he was not observing Lord. But I think what Narada was saying, that he was not thinking about the Lord partly nor negatively. He was not, he had thoughts about the Lord. He was thinking he's Lord. You see? So
Narada
says you should not be like Vena, because he was completely unfortunate.
Tasmat yena kena prakarena manah Krishna niveshaya. That's Narada's conclusion. Is by whatever means, absorb your mind in Krishna. So, yeah, Vena wasn't sufficiently threatened by Krishna. That was the issue. So he thought he could do what he wanted. But Raman, for example, or Shishupal, I mean, all these people, they were threatened in a fundamental way by Krishna. One more question.
I was bringing up the point that the other day we were discussing in Nagaraj Prabhu's class, that how if someone falls down, Krishna forgives them. But when we criticize, when we criticize that fall down or that devotee, or then we commit an offense, and that is much more egregious and causes so much harm to our devotional life than the person who had a fall down and Krishna easily forgives it, making an offense towards the Vaishnava by criticizing. And I mentioned it because it requires that in any kind of event,
Yeah, so there are two things that are in tension here. One is the recognition that, you know, there are certain behaviors that have to be avoided to avoid fall down. So if somebody analyzes some situation or distances himself or herself from that situation of fall down, if they are connected with them somehow, for example, then that's just self-protection. That's common sense. You know, if you tell somebody, well, you know, nothing has happened, ignore everything, that's difficult. That's not really feasible for people. So the idea there is, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains there that, this is the verse, I think, Nagaraj, Kaunte Pati Jani Hiname Bhaktatana Shidi, Vichet Sudaracharu Bhagate Maam Ananya Bhak, Sadhureva Samantavya, Samyag Yavasitra Sahara. So this verse is useful for us to remember how to react, but also we have to distance ourselves. We have to have some sense that, okay, this is not desirable, this is not a good thing. It is not about the devotee per se, or anybody can fall down in time. Narayan Rishi says that. You know, we are jivas, we are not perfect, we are trying. So people get personally affected by situations, and so there has to be that also factored in. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Arjuna, you know, he says people are not going to believe this. You know. If they are egregious, you know, they are doing horrible things, how can you say that they are to be considered devotees, sadhus? It's beautiful, I recommend reading that passage, Vishwanath Chakravarti creates this dialogue. How can you consider these people sadhus? No, they are my devotees. I am saying, Krishna begins to progressively get angry, his voice starts to, Vishwanath Chakravarti says, he begins to get more and more irritated. Arjuna's prodding. So how can you say that they are devotees? No, they are my devotees, so they have to be considered sadhus. And Arjuna says, okay, then maybe we should consider them sadhus when they are in the portion that they are performing devotion. And we consider them not sadhus in the portion where they are behaving not horribly. Because you have to have some discrimination, as I was saying. Otherwise, you know, everybody is a sadhu. He says, no. Krishna says, no. They are sadhus because the bhakti is in seed form and it's going to sprout. Nagaraj Prabhu made that point later on. And we don't have that vision. You know, what's going to happen to these people after death, in the future lives? So, once the bhakti is there in seed form, but the condition is that bhakti has to be the predominant aspect of their activities. Acceptance of guru has to be there and all of those things. If that's there, then we have to be careful. Yeah, we have to be very careful. But at the same time, it's undeniable that there are personal, you know, like for example, when the guru falls down, the disciple goes to hell because of that. And how should we respond? This is such a complex and delicate topic. So Dhruva Maharaj's stepbrother offended Dhruva Maharaj, pulled him down from the king's lap. Before he was actually purified in Sivashtra. I don't think, nothing intelligent comes to mind. Maybe you want to say something. What is your question? Maybe if you can focus it. Does it apply to Suruchi? That's the question. You know, considering that she is Dhruva Maharaj's mother, it would definitely apply to her. Well, there are many examples. Banasur. Banasur is Bali Maharaj's son. He's Pradhan Maharaj's grandson. So although he's this big demon, Krishna gave him a, you know, eternal form as Lord Shiva's associate. He cut off all his hands, left four. He could have killed him. He should have killed him because he was so offensive. But because he was Prahlad Maharaj's grandson, Sanatana Goswami Prabhu explains this in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita beautifully. Therefore, he let him know. Bali Maharaj, same thing. Because he was connected to Prahlad Maharaj, therefore, and the same thing I think would apply to Dhruva Maharaj's mother. Because she was connected with Dhruva Maharaj. Actually, you could say in a way, she was the cause of his elevation to pure devotional status. So, yeah. Can you elaborate on that? I'm forgetting. Yeah, but I think that ultimately, Paramahamsa, I'm sure, has something to add. But let me come back to you after I go to Janmashtami to you. We'll come back to that point. Thank you. But like I said, because she is connected with Dhruva Maharaj, therefore she is going to ultimately get an auspicious destination. Just like all of us are connected with Prabhupada. Imagine that.
Mm.
Part of the thing is that the gurus in our movement have peers. Prabhupada's disciples are gurus, and they have godbrothers and godsisters. And so the gurus have to have good relationships with them so that they can keep them on a straight and narrow. You can't expect the lower rank and file, the disciples. Because, you know, it goes against the grain of a disciple to look for faults in the guru. But if the guru had healthy relationships with peers, then there wouldn't be such possibilities for problems to arise. At least that's my perspective on this.
Well, that's
Oh, isolation? Okay. Yeah, that needs to be fixed. That's not responsible behavior. And then, you know, a peer offers criticism, then it's the duty of the person to receive that criticism also, to rectify. If that doesn't happen, then the person is filed to run anyway. Whether the disciples tell you or the peers tell you, it's not going to make any difference. But in a broad scheme of things, one has to understand that this can happen to anyone. And it can happen to us. When somebody takes up the position of a guru, that's a major, major sacrifice. It's not fun to be a guru. Although I joke about how it's nice to have brahmacharis doing everything for you, but it's not. And so if somebody takes that role and you are not taking that role, then there is a reason for that. That's a major sacrifice. And then, yeah, things can happen that can lead to fall down. Like, you know, discussion of Bhakti Rasamrita Prasanna, Bhava Bhakti, you can go to Bhava Bhakti, but even at Bhava, where you have direct perception of Krishna, you can fall down through offenses and back down. So what should a disciple do? Bhaktivinoda Thakur, his example is there, that he gave up his initiating spiritual master. It doesn't mean that one gets so heartbroken, oh, my guru was this perfect person, that's sentimental. If you go into a relationship with the guru thinking that the guru is Krishna and never falls down, that's not possible. Yeah, the guru is Krishna, and as long as he or she represents Krishna's teachings faithfully and follows Krishna's teachings faithfully. That condition is there. And so, that's why it's important to study Shastra and know philosophy and not be sentimental about all these things. In general. Yeah. Well, I think part of it is, it's not always obvious whether there is an offense being made. Things are complex, relationships are complex, people are complex, situations are complex. That's why people are careful, because you can't say, oh, this person is committing offense. Conversations are useful, have dialogue. Then you might be able to judge, but even then your perceptions might be imperfect. Complicated. I don't think I have answers here.
Right.
We should not be upset.
It strikes me that
Yeah, I can see what you're saying. There could be patterns that emerge. Yes, a lot of it also is common sense. And just in general, every devotee, I think, in his con should cultivate the association of people, have a suitable, you could say, body of advisors or mentors, but they can go for this advice, but unbiased, you know, like everything else, like other people say, human and social behavior. Go to people for advice. I do that frequently. Oh, Madan Mohan Prabhu has a concluding statement in this talk. Madanisms.
I'm looking in Bhagavatam 4, Canto Chapter 9, Text 23, which mentions the Lord continued, sometime in the future, your brother Uttam will go to the forest, and he will be killed. Your stepmother Suruchi, being maddened by the death of her son, will go and search him out in the forest, and she will be devoured in a forest fire. And in the purport, Prabhupada explains that question. Okay, it's a long report, but it says, his stepmother had insulted Dhruva, who was not an ordinary person, but a great Vaishnava. An offense at the lowest feet of Vaishnava is the greatest offense in this world. Because of having insulted Dhruva Maharaj, Suruchi would become mad upon the death of her son and would enter the forest fire, and thus her life would be ended. This is specifically mentioned by the Lord to Dhruva because he was determined for revenge against her. From this, we should take the lesson that we should never try to insult the Vaishnava. Not only should we not insult the Vaishnava, but we should not insult anyone unnecessarily. When Suruchi insulted Dhruva Maharaj, he was just a child. She, of course, did not know that Dhruva was a great recognized Vaishnava, so her offense was committed unknowingly. When one serves a Vaishnava unknowingly, one still gets a good result. But if one unknowingly insults a Vaishnava, one suffers the bad result. A Vaishnava is especially favored by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, pleasing him or displeasing him directly affects the pleasure and displeasure of the Supreme Lord. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, his 8 standards of the prayers to the spiritual master, Sanyasya Prasada Bhagavata Prasada. By pleasing the spiritual master as a pure Vaishnava, one pleases the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and if one displeases the spiritual master, one does not know where he's going. And in another place, it also mentions that before you become a great devotee, that it's still effective. So it's like retroactive once you come to yourself. That device, Janata Bhishanichinai, says, be very careful about any of that because you're not really seeing Krishna's hand in what's going on.
Yeah. Of course, there are degrees of Vaishnavas and you know, offense at some pure devotee is far worse than offense at, let's say, Kanishka Hikari. So the, if you look at, but the thing is, it is not possible to offend the Mahabhagavata. Because if you look at Ambarish Maharaj's pastimes, he was offended him, but he didn't take any offense. He forgave him instantly. So I often wonder about this. Is it possible to offend a pure devotee? Is it possible to offend a pure devotee? Answer is yes. Let's see. This is the absolute last. I gotta go. I have an appointment. Well, it's the last one. Okay.
There is a famous work, Chaitanya Charitamrita, on Haridas Thakur in relation to Gopal Chakravarti, who was often challenged
on the process of liberation
by insulting that what to get liberated from of us, that's
in a that
you knows of.
Oh yeah, he got leprosy. Yeah.
No, he lost.
Oh, he lost his nose.
Leprosy, but nose came first.
Okay.
And then so the Haridas Thakur left. The point here, there's a famous verse. He says, "Bhakta sabab agga dos khama karo." As you say, the bhakta seeing the others due to ignorance they're committing this, so they forgive. Actually, Vaishnava doesn't take, which you said is very true. Krishna Sabha Bhakta Ninda Sahite Napara. And Prabhupada in the purport put a very interesting point. He says, in a lecture also he says, that Krishna was trying to make Arjuna angry. Arjuna forgave Duryodhana and Kauravas. He doesn't want to fight, he doesn't have him. But Krishna was trying to make him angry so that he would kill through Arjuna.
Hmm.
So it is Krishna actually will not forgive. It is not the devotee actually holds so much grudge. So it is dangerous.
Itago Premanand.